This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with The Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey, Bills Mafia. We know there's only one topic every day. All Bills, all the time. And now Matt Bove and Sal Capaccio are going really deep, talking Bills all year long, because it's always game day in Buffalo.
The Buffalo Bills have agreed to a trade. Sal Capaccio is heading to Australia in exchange for Dan Fates and Jenna Cottrell out of Rochester. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of It's Always Game Day in Buffalo. No, Sal, he continues his trip overseas. Is it overseas? Does Australia count as overseas, or is that just for Europe? How does that work?
I don't know.
It's over many seas.
Enough.
Yeah, it's over a lot of seas. Well, Sal is overseas, over across the globe in Australia. My friends from 13 Wham, Buffalo Plus, have been so gracious to join us this morning. Dan Fates, Jenna Cottrell. If you watch their stuff, she's got the hat, he's got the hoodie on. They are doing incredible work over there with Buffalo Plus. Their channel continues to grow. If you don't already subscribe, you should like, comment, and subscribe. That's their thing, how they start every video. Thanks for joining us, guys. I miss you both.
Yeah.
Miss you too, bud.
It's funny. Yeah, we were saying before we started recording that we see each other multiple times a week during the season. And then once the season's over, it's kind of like some text messages here and there, but it's tough to get everyone together.
What's new? Dan, what's new? How are the kids?
It's a lot of kids. Two kids. it's a lot. We got spring break, so I'm actually off this week, but I couldn't help but say no to my friend when he asked us to come on the channel. I don't know if you're watching this on YouTube. I don't know how I got center screen. That's a little concerning.
Well, it's because you're the star of the show, Dan. That's what everybody wanted to see you. Jenna, what's new with you? Anything exciting?
How's my mic sound? Is this better?
It sounds fine.
Yeah. Sounds good. Okay. Just making sure.
Yeah.
I'm in the middle of wedding planning, which, if you've ever done it, you know, is a monster and a lot. And the sticker shock is real. So there's that. But yeah, other than that, everything's good. Everything's healthy. So we love that. And yeah, just honestly, we were talking about it, just ready for, honestly, already ready for the season to start.
Yeah,
Bove, we got married at the right time when things were a lot cheaper.
I got very lucky because not only did I get married at the right time, I bought a house at the right time. Oh my God. Houses are so expensive. That's ridiculous. How are people supposed to afford a house, let alone a house and getting married? I don't get it, but whatever.
Can I ask real quick, how involved were you guys in the wedding planning process?
Not very.
Yeah.
Not very. I shouldn't say like I did the things that I thought we needed. Like, for example, we had Chick-fil-A for our late night snack. So like I took care of all of that. So I got the Chick-fil-A situated. I think the limo, because, you know, we got married in a church. So it was like the whole ordeal of getting married at 1 o'clock. And then the reception was at like 5 or 6. So we needed a limo for the wedding party. I did all the suit stuff for the guys. Just like a couple little, but like she took care of the big stuff. The venue, yeah. The photographer, all that kind of stuff.
I was role player. I was six man off the bench. Like, let me know what you need me to do. Yeah. And I'm there, but I'm not taking the final shot. I'm not, I don't actually make the call. Like, I'm just like, Skip, whatever you need me. I'm pinch hitting, like ready to go.
Yeah. I mean, my fiance has been really good, but my issue is more so like, I struggle. I don't know what I want. There's so many decisions. Like, what color linen, what color silverware? I'm like, I don't know. What's like the boilerplate? Let's go from there. Like, the little details.
I made the joke with my wife that, you know, I love dearly, that after the process was done, that it was a lot of work, but that we'll be better prepared for the second time. And she didn't like the joke. I was like, it's good that we got this practice and we'll be better at it the second time we do it.
I would light you on fire.
My wife says the same thing where she's like, I want to get married again. And I'm like, that's not how this works. Like,
well,
if we, like, get married, it's you get married again. It's not going to be to me. That's a problem.
Well, hopefully none of us run into that problem. Yes. I don't think any of us will, knock on wood. So we're at this point. I don't even know what day it is. Oh, it's April 2nd, because yesterday was April 1st. So we're recording this a little bit earlier in the week here. We are a month into the chaos for the Bills offseason. There's been kind of a lot that has happened, but nothing that was, I think, a huge surprise. As we look back on the last month, I guess, Dan, I'll start with you. Was there anything that has happened up to this point that really caught you by surprise with what the team has done?
No, I think a lot of the moves, if you watch the Buffalo Plus YouTube channel, kind of a shtick of, I say the salary cap isn't real. So a lot of people, I have a problem with the term salary cap casualty, that a lot of these players were cut just to get under the cap. A lot of the money that they saved, they then turned right around and spent on younger players. The team made a conscious effort this offseason to get younger. That's what we saw. Mitch Morse one was probably the most surprising one. But Bove, I think what Bean did from a PR standpoint that was really well done was rip the Band-Aid off all at once. That this wasn't a trickle down of cut Poyer, cut Morse, cut Trey White. Like, he ripped the Band-Aid off. Like, everybody was gone and you're ready to move on. So that's the sense of Morse was maybe the most surprising, but they were all football moves that had salary cap benefits to them moving forward.
Jenna, what about you?
You talk about the business side of things, and when you do look at it from the roster was getting older, where are these guys going to be playing at this upcoming season, projecting forward? These are all moves that did make sense. But I think for me, it wasn't surprising they made the moves, but it was a little shocking because of the players that they were. And Jordan Poyer, Trey White, Mitch Morse. These are guys that have meant so much to this Bills team, especially Trey White, obviously Jordan Poyer. Like, it goes without saying that I think for fans, it was more so just the emotional element of it that was so shocking. Those tried and true guys that we see running out there for Buffalo, not being there this upcoming season. So I think that for me is kind of what stands out. Like, these are all moves that needed to be made, but emotionally speaking, seeing all the cuts being released and what was happening was just, it was jarring.
Were any of them mistakes, though? I think I'm willing to say that I think cutting Morse is a mistake. I don't think that they should have done that. Do you think that any of them were mistakes?
I think they had a plan in mind, especially when you heard Brandon Bean. Bove, you were there at the owner's meeting when he was asked about Connor McGovern. And I thought it was telling that he said, we always thought he had the ability to play center. We just didn't know when that was going to be needed. And to me, if you sign somebody knowing he could play center, knowing what Morse was going to be approaching 30, knowing his injury history, knowing the cap hit that it was going to be, I find it hard to believe that you pay him that much money and also don't think that there's a possibility that that's not a route that Bean's taking. I think that we always have to remember, and Bean's really smart at this, you don't just look at it at one season. Like, you're kind of looking 2 to 3 years ahead. Where am I going to be in 2 years? Where am I going to be in 3 years? What do I need wide receiver wise? What positions am I deep at? So when he said that to me, it was kind of like he was tipping his hand. Like, we kind of made this decision when we signed Connor McGovern to know, like, hey, if things go well with how well Connor played and the pieces that we could do, this is a route we could take. And then they went and did it.
Jenna,
I don't think it was a mistake. Again, I think it was what Dan talks about of, you have to look down the line. that is something you have in your vision, you have the year ahead, and then you have the projection of, okay, what are we going to do? How is this going to line up? How is this going to set up things for down the road? It was surprising though. That was a surprise, but I think really time will tell. Connor McGovern has some experience at center. Will it be, you know, what the Bills need him to be after 1 year with the team and him kind of moving into that slot? We shall see. But that was one of the guys that I just was not expecting. But I feel like in this league, like you're constantly tweaking, you're constantly restructuring what you want from your team, where you want players to be, and which players those are. So we'll see.
What's your favorite move? Do either of you have a favorite move? Jenna, you can start this time if you want, since Dan has got the last couple.
I'd say Daquan Jones, just them bringing him back. I think he was really like an unsung type of hero. Obviously, the injury for him was upsetting because the season he was having. But I think for the Bills, like, yeah, he's getting older, all these things. But what he has meant to the team since he's been with them, and just the rapport he has with the guys and the playmaking ability he's shown, I think that's a nice move. There's been so much turnover, especially on the defensive side of the ball, that to have a guy that, you know, other players really rally around, to have him re-sign, have his career kind of be revived in Buffalo, and for him to get rewarded for that, I think that's a move that I really liked, because it's not the flashiest move, but I think that's something that speaks waves to the other players in that locker room. And I think too that it's a guy that kind of was a safety blanket and added some stability and playmaking ability that the Bills will need.
I think Curtis Samuel is the flashy one. He was a guy I think that a lot of us thought heading into this offseason. I know we talked about on our channel the thought of he makes a lot of sense. I still don't think I think Bove and I both, I think you tweeted it around the same time of like, I like Curtis Samuel. He hasn't changed my thoughts on how the Bills approach this draft. We can get to that later, but like, he's a nice piece. And I don't think you could have too much speed. So I like what he can provide. He falls somewhere between, like, Mike and I were joking about the one day, like, he has Deebo Samuel traits. He falls somewhere between like Isaiah McKenzie and Deebo Samuel. Like he's somewhere in between there where he's gadgety enough. It's funny. I remember like always going into the draft being like, I want the Bills to get a running back, or I want the Bills to get a wide receiver. And then it was just like, I want the Bills to get a weapon. I don't care what it is. That's what he provides. I like that move. The other one that I like that's maybe a little more under the radar, maybe I'm higher on than most, I think Ty Johnson came on really strong at the end of the season. And I really think that they don't have to go into this draft and waste a pick on a running back, in my opinion. Like, I think Ty Johnson, I don't know if he's running back two, but I don't think he's running back three. So it's like he's running back 2.5. Like, I think he proved enough in the passing game. I thought he was good in short yardage situation where at times James Cook has struggled. So he's got speed. He's not like a Ezekiel Elliott, like great short yardage, but he's good enough that I thought, hey, on third and one, I feel confident that you don't have to have Josh get beat up every single time and you can go with Ty Johnson. So I thought at the end of the year, I liked him. So I was happy they brought him back.
The Curtis Samuel one is absolutely the one that I think most people would get to. And to your point of thinking, hey, I like this move because I don't think it takes away what they want to do in the draft and get one early. But I will say, after the conversations at the owners' meetings with Bean, McDermott, with other people there, I think the Curtis Samuel move is a bigger move than maybe we originally gave it credit for. I think that they have bigger plans for him than maybe, because you can just go look at the numbers and say, okay, this is what you were expecting from him. Like, I think he's going to be utilized a lot. Like, I'm going into this year anticipating that he is their wide receiver too, even though they are going to get somebody who they think will long-term leapfrog him on the depth chart. Is that the right? Because that's my mind. I'm like, very clearly this year, I think it's Diggs, Samuel, whoever they draft, and Shakir. And those are going to be the four guys that they roll out. But I just don't see, unless they absolutely hit a home run, any guy that they draft, whether late in the first round or early in the second round, coming in and immediately getting 75, 80 catches. Like, that's kind of the bar I'm setting for Curtis Samuel this year.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. You'll be glad you did.
Hey, it's Sal Capaccio from It's Always Game Day in Buffalo. It's not just a podcast. It's the 25th hour of your day, your weekly source for all things Buffalo Bills. Right on time, your time. In the car, navigate the streets with NFL wisdom in your ear. We accompany every errand you need to run. Washing the windows or vacuuming the carpets? Don't just clean, conquer. Podcasts make you more productive because we fit perfectly into your schedule. Follow It's Always Game Day in Buffalo in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Dan hates that.
You don't like that.
I speak faith. He hates that.
Why do you hate that?
Because Curtis Samuel doesn't fix the problem of what the Bills offense lacks, which was a downfield, take the top off the defense kind of guy. Now, mm-hmm. I believe that the Bills right now, which is fine, And I have so much confidence, and I'm very high on Joe Brady with a full offseason and all of these things. And you get to see his full spin on an offense because he really was kind of thrown in the deep end of the pool. They have a lot of guys that are really good close to the line of scrimmage and like middle depth. They don't have anybody that scares you, that you line up going, oh crap, I don't want him to run past me. So I think you need something like that, an explosive play guy. Now, Samuel is electric when he gets the ball in his hands. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of, is there a guy that stretches defenses? We know, and holy cow, do they say it every single time they talk about defenses nowadays, of split safeties and making sure that nobody gets over the top of you? Every defense does that. Bove, players still get behind those safeties sometimes. And they have to try and find a guy that can do that, or at least instill some fear in it. So where you talk about you're not sure if there's a guy that catches 75 passes, I think there's a couple guys in the first round that could be there at 28 or in that 18 to 28 range that I think would fix that problem of a game-changing deep threat to this Bills offense, which I think they lack.
Okay, but then to that point, if they draft somebody – and they, you know how I feel about Gabe Davis. If they draft somebody and that guy comes into this team and has a Gabe Davis type impact, is that good enough? Because Gabe Davis was not putting up those numbers. I don't disagree with you. I don't disagree. But I also think it's probably a little bit too lofty of an expectation to think that this person is coming in and catching 75 balls for 1,000 yards. Like, am I, Jenna, nuts? Well, I know I'm nuts, but like with this take?
I think if you're drafting a guy in the first round, especially if you were to move up a little bit, which we've seen Bean do for the last five drafts, he's moved up. So if we see him do that, I expect a guy to have maybe not 1,000 yards, but I expect him to – I feel like a lot of times too what we've seen from Sean McDermott and the coaching staff is kind of like work a guy along. I remember before Dalton Kincaid even had his first snap in a regular season – everyone was like, hey guys, pump the brakes. Like he's got to get to his first practice, his first preseason game, all of that. So I think they'll want to like tailor their expectations down in terms of what fans will see. But in terms of what I want to see production wise on the field, I mean, if you're taking a guy in the first round, and we talk so much about the depth there is at wide receiver in this draft, like I expect there to be a lot of yards, a lot of catches, a lot of plays. And especially with, you have Diggs, you can learn from him. There's Curtis Samuel. Like there is the ability to spread the ball around. So maybe there won't be as many catches, but I expect there to be a lot of dynamic play from that guy. If it is a wide
receiver. I'm looking back at some of the other guys who they've had in similar roles. Like Gabe Davis' best season from a catch standpoint was 2022. He had 48 catches. Emmanuel Sanders, when he was here,
but
had
42
catches.
Gabe Davis had a lot of opportunity.
Uh-huh. Yeah, but okay.
So not if it catches not a lot of production as what as compared to what opportunity he had though.
So let's say he has 10 more catches though. We're still only talking about 58 catches and Emmanuel Sanders having 42 catches. I just think that there is a much clearer path for Curtis Samuel to getting twice as many targets as whoever they draft than there. And I'm not even saying that there should be. I just think that there is. Like, didn't we say way too many times last year, why is Dalton Kincaid not more involved? I don't know. Probably because he's a young rookie and they take their time with developing those guys. I think there's a bad perception out there that the Bills don't play their rookies because that's not
I agree.
True. Like, Osiris Torrance played every snap last year. Dalton Deion. Kincaid played a ton of football. Deion, like, they are not shy from playing rookies if they have earned it. So I don't like that narrative at all. But I also don't think they completely throw them into the deep end either.
I think you are classic undersell Bove. Like, you are always temper expectations. Like, that's your personality.
Yeah.
But comparing a first round wide receiver, say it's one of the top six guys, and pretty much you can shuffle those top three guys are set, and then maybe you're debating on the 4 through 7 guys, right? That's different than Gabe Davis at any point in his career. And that's different than Emmanuel Sanders at the end of his career. And that's like, that's where I think people get lost. And like, I get it. There's depth. Guess what? There's going to be depth in next year's wide receiver class and the year after that and the year after that. And there's going to be depth in the next wide receiver class in 2027. The problem is that like you have Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs, like, and Dalton Kincaid to take up the middle of the field too. Like, there's a lot of guys that their strengths overlap in the Bills offense right now. And that's why I think there's an opportunity for a guy. And like, let's not act like this is a offense that is in rebuild mode where a wide receiver goes there his first year and it's like, oh, he has to be the number one guy. This guy has to come along and he will have a unreal setup for offensively. And so why can't he have 1,000 yards? Like, why do we automatically put training wheels or like mentally think the thought of like, well, he shouldn't do that. Like, why not have the expectation of this guy should catch 6 catches for 75 yards a game? Like, why isn't that an expectation? Like, you can get some of these game changing wide receivers that we have seen come into the league, a Puka Nacua. And I know that's a fifth rounder, but like you look at Chase Jefferson, those guys come in and be immediate impact guys. And I think that's where Bills fans, and we've just never seen it. You've never seen it. You've gotten Khalil Shakir and you're like, oh, like, and I like Khalil Shakir and I like his 4 for 50 or his 3 for 38. Like, that's all great. But if that's for a fifth round guy, you get a first round guy. Why can't the expectations be to double that and to be in an offense that is set up to succeed? Because, oh yeah, you've got Josh Bleep and Allen. Like there is going to be opportunities to succeed for a young rookie to come in and not have training wheels.
But don't you think that the majority of those targets, not all of them, like if they get somebody in the first round who is a Ja'Marr Chase or a Puka Nacua or somebody who's an unbelievable player, the conversation completely changes. But shouldn't we be expecting the second most catches on this team going to Dalton Kincaid next year? Like, that's how so it's just like there's not that many catches left. If Diggs gets 100 and if Kincaid gets 85 and if Samuel gets 65, it's like,
but Gabe had like 100 last year.
Who?
Gabe
had 100 catches?
Targets.
Yeah, he had 81. He had 81 targets and he caught 45, which is not efficient enough at all. Yeah. I mean, that's not good, which is why I don't think he's back here right now. But yeah, I don't know. It's a fascinating thing to try and figure out.
Yeah, that's the one thing. Like, I love Dan because he is, first of all in team wide receiver A, but B, like, I think there is, Dan has some hot takes, but it's not always bad hot takes. There's also the upside hot takes, which you hear about when he's talking about, I want a wide receiver that's drafted in the first round to get 1,000 yards and all these catches. I think the one thing that stops me is you're right, Bove, like, you have to share the ball. There's only one football. Isn't that the cliche? I think though that sometimes the numbers can be deceiving. And it's more the play on the field. Like, what type of catches is he having? What is the yak at? Where are we at in terms of that? Because there probably will be more limited opportunities unless he is a game breaker that you need to throw him the ball, which that's the hope, obviously. But I think sometimes it's hard to judge by the numbers. Obviously, the better the numbers, the better the player a lot of times. But I just think for what I expect from this person, this wide receiver, is for them to have a skill set that is outstanding. We've talked a lot about on the Buffalo Plus channel, like, versatility is great when you're drafting later on, but I want a guy that has an unbelievable, he is unbelievably talented. Maybe he's a burner, something like that, that sets him apart, that instills fear in the opposing defenses. So I want a guy like that, and you can build off of that.
I want to see Josh Allen play with like an athletic freak. I want to see Josh Allen play with like a Brian Thomas or an Adonai Mitchell and see what those guys can do in an offense like this. So this feels like a natural point to ask this question. Is it a failure if the Bills do not draft a wide receiver in the first round? Like, does it have to be wide receiver, or are there scenarios where it's okay to not do it and then maybe do it in the second round? Jenna, what do you think?
I think selfishly. Like,
do they have to do it? Do they have to?
I don't know. I don't think they have to. I think because there are a lot of players, depending on how the draft board falls, if there's a lot of guys that are not getting picked and you feel comfortable in the second round that you can get someone that's immensely talented and you have an outstanding thing, you're like, oh, you know what, Byron Murphy, we really want him. Or you go to another position of need. Would I be disappointed? Yes. But that's not to say that that's always going to be the wrong move. But yeah, I mean, I want offense, but if they were to go defensively because a player is sticking out on their board, I mean, Brandon Bean talks about post-draft, how a lot of times they're like, we don't really have as many first round grades on guys. So if they feel like they can get more value later on in wide receiver and they have a guy sticking out on their board and they go get him, I'm okay with that.
They could still go edge. I just, I know. They could.
Yeah, I mean, they could.
But could and should are different.
Exactly. And that's, that's where I am with this wide receiver. Mm-hmm. It's very rare that a need and a want line up. Mm-hmm. And I feel like for the Bills, it lines up because not only we can debate Curtis Samuel as a 2A or 2B wide receiver. That's fair. I'm not going to argue either way. But you also have to look at next year. And you also have to look at what is Stephon Diggs going to be next year. And look, I love Stephon Diggs. I think he is still a top 10 wide receiver in this league. He's probably not top 5 anymore. I'd like to give him another shot with Joe Brady and to see again what he can really do. But I think you're looking for a wide receiver 2 this year and somebody that can be a wide receiver 1 next year. That's my expectation. So look, I like Javon Baker in the second round. There are guys that I think you can get. I think you can trade back in the, you know, if somebody wants a quarterback at the end of the first, like, I get it. I see all those things. I just would like it. I think that you have gone so much with, hey, Josh, make this work with, you know, Emmanuel Sanders. And hey, make, and even you're asking Stephon Diggs, like, hey, be the main guy that gets doubled all the time and has to face all these other, hey, we got you Gabe Davis and we think he's going to be the guy. And like, really give him all the tools that he needs. And again, we talked about it last year, going into last season, I thought the Bills had maybe the 22nd best wide receiver room. Like, I like really, like in all honesty, and you're asking Josh to make a lot of chicken soup out of chicken, you know what? Like, so it's kind of challenging at times where I'd like to see you've invested $250 million in him. Like, let him do it. Like give him the resources. Don't just pay him and then be like, well, we paid you, so now you got to fix everything. You got to help him out. The offensive line, the improvements they've made there are outstanding. But Bean has kind of, you know, Justin Shorter. We cannot have a podcast without talking and mentioning Justin Shorter. So I just want that to be on the record before comments start flowing in. I'd like to see a wide receiver. That's just me.
I'm glad you brought up Justin Shorter because now that transitions us well to Christian Wade, so we can have that conversation. So with the wide receiver thing, I think it's an insurance policy. I just keep thinking back to that game against the Chiefs, and I know there were so many different things that went wrong in that game, but you shouldn't be having to throw the ball way down the field to Trent Sherfield multiple times in a game. You shouldn't have to have all of these guys who you were not counting on during the regular season. And, you know, Stephon Diggs has been a very good, reliable player for them for a long time. But two things. He was not the same Stephon Diggs in the second half. I fully expect him to still be like a number one guy. But also, he has always, always, always been available since he got to Buffalo. What if something happened to him? There's no way you could go into a game with Curtis Samuel as your number one wide receiver and Mac Collins as your number two or Khalil Shakir. Like, that can't happen. So for me, the wide receiver thing is not just about getting more explosive. It's also about you need other guys there that you can trust. Because when Gabe Davis didn't play in the Chiefs game, you looked like you had one of the worst wide receiver rooms in the NFL. And guess what? Like, you can't beat the Chiefs with only the Chiefs can get away with having a bad wide receiver room. Literally, only the Chiefs. The Bills cannot do that. So I definitely think that they need to ask or add a wide receiver early. The last kind of big one for me is what else? What else do they need to do? I know they'll get $10 more million in June, but from now until whenever training camp starts, what else does this team need? Jenna, go ahead.
Well, no, Bove, I wanted to ask, going off your point of like, if they were to trade back or if they were to get a defensive player in the first round, would you view that as a failure?
I guess it depends how they do it. It also, the hindsight point of it is very interesting, because if there's one of those guys who is like a fringe first round pick right now that could somehow be had in the second round, like if they could get a Xavier Legette or a Ladd McConkey or a Keon Coleman and they get those guys in the second round, then great. It's almost like what happened last year with Osiris Torrance. Torrance, a lot of people thought was going to be a first round pick. He wasn't. They get Kincaid and then they get Torrance, and it's like, wow, that feels like a slam dunk of a 1-2. So if you could get a defensive tackle or an edge rusher or a Chop Robinson, whatever it is, in the first round, and then you have something else that you can get in the second round. The thing that scares me, though, is you don't have a ton of ammunition to move up. If there's a run in the second round on a wide receiver and all of a sudden they start going, you don't have, like, you could give up a 4 and a 5 or whatever it takes, but are you really going to then not draft again until the fifth round? Like, what do you get? I mean, I don't know. Yeah,
that's there.
Yeah. I just feel like
Oh, go ahead, Dan.
Day 3 is a waste this year, in my opinion. A waste. No, hang on. Hear me out. There's a hot take for
this
you.
This is where the pendulum swings and we get.
Bove, have you looked at, they've said that this is maybe one of the weakest drafts because there's only like 41 undergrads.
Yeah. So I was talking about this at the owners meetings with a couple people and they basically said like tons of high end talent and then it hits a pretty big wall. So it's not a great Yeah, it's not a great year to have 11 picks with most of them being late.
So, again, everybody's like, oh, you could add these guys. I think day 3 guys, there may be one or two that stands out. I think a lot of the guys get cut. So, like, you're sitting here being like, look at all these picks. Look at all these picks. We can build depth. It's like, crappy depth is still crappy. And, like, bad players still don't make the team. So I do have this sense of, like, package a bunch of picks. Go up and the second round and the third round, like make moves on day 2 if you want to, because that's where it's a cliff because of the NIL and the transfer portal. Like, players are staying in longer, so you're not having all of these star underclassmen come out. Like, so again, if there's a year to have 6 picks in day 3, this is not the year to have it.
Jenna,
well, I am curious, because since the Bills currently don't have a third round pick, and you think of the players that they have added in the third round, Spencer Brown, Terrell Bernard, they picked up Dorian Williams last year, Devin Singletary. Now, Singletary obviously was a starter for the team. Spencer Brown, Terrell Bernard, like your starting middle linebacker. Like, they have added pieces that have been very important on their roster. So them not having that right now stands out to me of – Are they going to want to figure out a way to get back into the third round? But you're right, Dan, I hear you. Like, 11 picks is a lot, but if 11 picks is, you know, you're scraping pennies together at the back end, then why not try to do as much as you can to get back up? And
I think what could be their best thing that they could do, and it's not something that would be super popular, I think if there is a lot of talent left, the best thing they could do is probably trade out of the first round and try and recoup another day 2 pick. And I think that Bills fans would sit there and they would groan. But if you could add another second round pick and then get a third round pick because you really like the wide receivers that are left, then all of a sudden you could still take a wide receiver, a defensive tackle. And then in the third round, you could take something that maybe isn't a pressing need right now, but could be down the road. You could take a center. You could take a guard if you don't like what David Edwards brings. You could do something like that that I think would be a little bit too early to do given the needs that they have. But I think that might honestly, but the most fun thing would be for them to like trade the house and move up. I mean, that would be amazing. Like, what if Brandon gets on the phone with Joe Shane and is like, I want Malik Nabers. And he's like, I'll give you a one next year. I'll give you something else. It's like the Julio Jones trade. Like that would be the most fun, but it might not be the smartest, if that makes any sense.
We talked about on the Buffalo Plus YouTube channel, Mike Catalana and I did like a mock draft. Like if the Bills were to trade up a lot, if the Bills were to trade up a little, if they were to stay put, if they were to all this stuff. But we talked about, you know, hey, the Bears have the 9th overall pick. They got, if they got their quarterback and Caleb Williams and they wanted to have more ammunition to get other guys, they wanted more players around him, would they trade out of 9? Would it be for the Bills? You package, you know, your 4th round picks and then also your number one from next year. Like, I mean, this would be extremely aggressive of Bean, but that's the fun part about the draft is there's just so many possibilities. Do you think that, what's a higher probability in your mind? The Bills trading up, whether that be, I would imagine, a couple spots, or do you think they trade out? I think the least probable is them staying at 28, in my opinion.
Up. I almost am banking on them trading up.
Yeah, it's always up, right?
Yeah, I don't think it'll be a crazy trade up, like to a top 10 pick or to get one of the top 3 guys. But yeah, I could see them starting to, you know, Brian Thomas is there or Adonai Mitchell is there, and they're like, holy crap.
That was me last year with Addison. I loved mm-hmm. Jordan Addison. And all of the wide receivers were there until like 19. And then they went like 19, 20, 21, and they started flying off the board. And then the Bills kind of were there. Mm-hmm. But again, it wasn't as, they didn't think it was as much of a need because I'm sure they probably thought Gabe was going to take that step. The one thing I'll say, you talk about like what's left. It's probably an edge, probably some more bodies. I know they've added some fringe guys. It's like they're signing and everybody goes and looks at their 3 sacks that they've had. And they go, you know, he could be, you know, a rotation guy.
He could get four.
And then all of a sudden it's like, we forget about them. We'll talk to them once at camp before a preseason game and then they'll all get cut. But anyway, I digress. The fact is that I have done a complete 180. A complete 180 on a safety. And here's my thoughts why. And safety in the later round, I'm okay with. Again, 3rd and on. But I was very worried that the Bills were going to go into a season with Taylor Rapp and DeMar Hamlin. And then they add Mike Edwards, who, again, is kind of a fringe starter. He's kind of been a backup most of his time. I think I'm going to believe and trust in Brandon Bean or in Sean McDermott and Bobby Babbage, because if there's one thing those guys can do, I fully believe it's coach up a safety. And whereas I don't love necessarily those pieces or and sit there and look at it and be like, I thought Taylor Rapp played better at the end of the year. But where I'm looking at it and I'm like, man, I've always said it's the most important position in this Bills defense just because they're the quarterback, even more than middle linebacker, in my opinion. Poyer and Hyde have just been such a mainstay. But I remember when they signed Jordan Poyer and we were like, he played baseball in college. We're like, oh, like he was a really good baseball player. Like that was what we talked about. And like, we never talked about his talent. And then they've developed him with Poyer. Like, I'm not going to sit there and not give Poyer any of the credit for the way he's developed, but like the coaching staff coached him up to be an all pro. And Hyde was good with Green Bay. It was a name we knew, but I didn't think he was that good. And so, and even when Hyde went down, before DeMar Hamlin collapsed on the field, he was really good. Like he had almost 100 tackles. Like I think they are very confident in themselves. They are betting on themselves to say, we can take Mike Edwards, a fringe starter, and we can take Taylor Rapp with another year, and we can take these backups and we'll coach them up to be pretty, pretty damn good safeties. And that's where I originally was like, oh my gosh, they are so screwed. They're so in trouble at safety. And now I've been thought about it and like, no, I'm going to trust McDermott and I'm going to trust Bobby Babbage that we're going to be okay at safety.
That has to be what they do when you have a defensive minded head coach. You have to have that approach because it's a disadvantage offensively, but it's a big advantage, obviously, defensively. Look at all the other contending teams, though. They have teams that have offensive-minded head coaches. You have Josh Allen, which helps you a lot, but you need to surround Josh Allen with as much help as humanly possible and let your defensive-minded head coach figure out how to get the most out of his defense. Like, that's just the way it has to be, given the way that you've kind of built your staff and the way you've had, you know, the run that you've had. Jen, I cut you off. I'm sorry.
No, I was just, wouldn't you think, though, that they would have the same, and no, not head coach, but like with Josh Allen, like, wouldn't you think the Bills would feel comfortable moving back because Josh Allen is going to make any wide receiver better?
Well,
like, couldn't you apply that same logic to wide receiver? And this is me being devil's advocate, but I think that they do believe that.
Gabe Davis.
He didn't make Trent Sherfield better. He didn't make, that was like, I mean, we thought consensus, he was the third wide receiver going into last year. We sat there at training camp every day and we're like, well, maybe that's the,
Because I was like, we signed
he's
a special
a lovely
team.
Man.
Yeah. He's a great guy.
When you are on three teams in 3 years and everybody goes, you know what? I think we got to steal. It's like, then why did the other two teams just let him walk out the door? Like, there's a reason that teams just let these guys walk. And again, that's where I'm like, it's always like whenever you sign a player, like the Bills, like your team signs a player, go and look at what the other fan base that he was playing on is saying. Because there are times when the other fan base is like, hallelujah, he's off the team. And other times they're like, oh, this sucks. We lost a good one here. Like that'll tell you a lot instead of looking at the three sacks or the three touchdowns that he has and analyzing the film going, you know, I think, you know, with Josh Allen and this guy, it's like, Matt Collins is who Matt Collins is. Matt Collins is playing in the playoffs, running deep routes, the Bills are screwed.
But I hear you. But also you could say to Jordan Poyer, like, oh, he's a guy that had a really bad injury, like when he was done with the Browns. Like, I don't think
he's 22.
Been like, pardon?
Poyer was 23.
I know, but still, you talk about like what the opposing fan base is saying, or not opposing, but the team that's getting rid of him. Like, I don't think Jordan Poyer would have been like, fans would have been like, oh my God, we're losing such a good one. It's not always indicative. I hear you, though.
They wouldn't have known who he was. Exactly. If they got rid of Jordan Poyer, they would have been like, oh, who? Like, and to your point about Jordan Poyer playing baseball, I never once in my life was like, oh, Jordan Poyer played baseball. I never thought about that.
He was like, it was just so funny being like, he got drafted. And we're like,
yeah.
I remember him going up there and being like, all right. And like, anybody have questions? And we're like, all right.
Hey.
Three questions. We're like, good to see you. We'll never talk to you again. Boy, were we wrong.
Yeah, I remember him coming into the room back in like the old school days of like the media room of like them bringing everybody in. I would imagine that year, the big one, was it even Micah Hyde?
It was Beasley too, because I remember Beasley came in and we were like, oh, no, like Cole Beasley.
Beasley was later.
No?
Beasley was prior.
Same room.
Yeah, same room though.
Well, it's always the same room.
you know who might have been the big one that year for 2018 was AJ McCarron. They brought him in to potentially be the starting quarterback.
Yes.
And then that was the next year. That was 2018, I believe. But yeah, 2017, the big ones were Micah and Jordan, and then obviously all the guys that they drafted. It's crazy to think where this team has come from, and I just keep thinking, I'm like, wow, it was not that long ago that it was the 17-year playoff drought.
2017, when Joe Webb throws a pass in a full-on blizzard, it's caught by Deontay Thompson.
Yeah, it's absolutely absurd.
That game was awesome.
One last hot take for you, Bove, because this is something we talked about last year at training camp, and we'll wrap this up.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Bills will have a more talented roster this year than they did last year.
I don't disagree with that at all. I don't disagree with it. I think part of that, though, is just younger. Who they'll get back. I think just as much of that is Matt Milano comes back. Like, they played
100%.
Almost the entire season without Matt Milano. Crazy. In 80% of the season without Daquan Jones. So not
they didn't
only
have Trey White, so like we didn't, they, you weren't missing.
I mean. So it's and you have a full year of Rasul Douglas. You have another year of Terrell Bernard, who I think is
Christian
going to
Benford.
Be a really good player. Christian Benford, I really like. I think it's going to be close because
I think the wide receiver room will be more talented.
I agree with that. I said after the Dolphins game, after Trey got hurt, that it was the most talented roster the Bills have had at any point in their kind of window. But then the next week, they lost Milano and they lost Daquan Jones in London. And then after that, it was my fault. It was basically my fault of everything that happened last year. So I don't disagree. I think it's going to be close, but I think the upside is significantly higher on this team than on last year's team, just because of the youth, right? Like, who knows what some of these guys might be. Dan, I checked Magic Kingdom wait times this morning from my couch on Grand Island.
I've already talked to my wife about doing owners meeting in Disney next year.
Well, the owners meeting next year probably won't be in Orlando. It'll probably
be rotates.
It rotates. It does West Palm, Phoenix, and Orlando, and I think Orlando only gets it every 5 years, so it won't be back for a while. But
it's better.
Don't tell my wife. Don't tell my wife. We'll just get on a plane. And we'll be like, "Hey, babe, like, don't worry about the sign. It's wrong." And we'll just go there.
It was Elia's first flight, and she did really well. It was great because Southwest, you know, they literally there's a plane from Buffalo to Orlando that just goes back and forth. Just direct flights back and forth to Orlando, which is amazing. So there were direct flights, and they were actually like empty flights. So on the flight coming home, when we were checking the car seat, we brought the car seat and the stroller when we were getting ready to check it. They were like, don't even bother checking it. Bring it on the plane because there's so many open seats that you can just bring the car seat on the plane. So we put the car seat at the window. We sat next to the car seat, and it was no different than like going on a ride in the car. She just kind of like sat there, and then every 40 minutes or so, we would take her out, play with her, try and feed her a little bit, and then put her right back. So that was incredibly convenient. So we lucked out big time. We lucked out big time on the travel aspect of it, and then, you know, Disney's great. Have you done? Yeah, you haven't done Disney with the kids?
No. So Shane's almost 4, so she would be almost 5 if we think about doing it next year, which I remember when I was growing up, we did it at 5 and 12 is when I went to Disney. But Ryan the baby would only be like a year and a half, so she wouldn't know much.
She wouldn't know anything, but it's more for you guys. It's still super fun. It's right. You're going to Disney.
Family? Was it just you and
we just did it? Yeah. Two of us. We did two of us and the baby. So that was
we also had Perino and Skursky to watch the baby and things like that.
Did you see the picture?
Yeah.
So Perino, so the way they do like a rider switch thing. So that was Jay's first time at Epcot in like 15 or 20 years. So he hadn't been on a lot of the rides. So Soarin', you know, is one of the rides there that my wife loves. It's like her favorite ride, but they wouldn't let us wait in line with the baby and then trade off. So they said, you can wait in line. And then when you get off, your wife can go on or vice versa. So my wife waited with the baby while Jay Perino and I went and rode Soarin'. And then once we got off, we went back to Andrea, and then Andrea and I were able to skip the line and go in and ride it again.
Look at you,
while we did that, Perino and Jay watched our daughter for a half an hour in the stroller and just walked her around Epcot, and we're like sending her videos and pictures. It was so cute.
That's adorable.
And then the next night we were at Magic Kingdom, and Catherine and Elena were there, and we all watched fireworks together on Main Street before we went back to the hotel, and then they like had 3 more hours of hanging out at the park. Disney's the best. I love Disney.
I haven't been there in a long time.
You're the perfect amount of a Disney fan. Like, there are Disney adults. Mm-hmm. No offense to any Disney adult fans listening to this right now, but some of them are unique. And
that's everything, though. You're right, but that's everything.
But Disney for the most part is for kids.
I don't know if I agree with that. I mean,
I think it originated as that, and they've done a really nice job of building it out.
I mean, Epcot is not for kids. You literally just go get hammered while you drink around countries.
Okay. I'm talking about like I'm not going to go there. Let's just say princesses and like dressing up I think should be for everybody enjoy themselves. Everybody enjoy themselves. Do what you do in love, and that's all that's important.
Yeah,
I want Shane to go to the princess experience.
Oh, 100%. That's all she wants. We're having a Disney-themed princess birthday party for her 4th birthday. It's everything. We have a whole wardrobe in her playroom, and it's just racks of all the Disney dresses. And every day, it's now she's getting good walking in heels because like she wants to walk and play heels.
She teach me.
Yeah, like we are full on in Disneyland.
As ridiculous as it sounds, because Disney is an insanely expensive trip, it was much more affordable with a 1-year-old than it would be with a soon-to-be 5-year-old Shane, because like a bubble wand is like $40. And yeah, like a soft pretzel is a ton of, everything is expensive. So when you have a child who can eat pouches from Aldi that are 85 cents and a little bit of whole milk here and there, like you can get away with not really spending any money besides getting in the park. But, you know, in 3 or 4 years when she's like, Daddy, can I get a Dilly bar? And can I get this stuffed animal of Pluto that looks like something you could get on Amazon for $2, like it would be much more expensive. I've kept you long enough. Thank you guys. I appreciate you coming on.
Yeah. Well, we can continue this conversation afterwards. Cause yeah, we go to Disney on Ice and she gets to pick one thing and she picks something and you're like, that's $58. And you're like, son of a, I walked into that one.
Yeah. It's like always expect the most expensive thing.
And Beauvais, the people that check you out, they go, would you also like a coloring book? And like she answers for us. She's like, yes. And you're like, that's another $12. It's like, awesome. I walked into that one.
It's like when you go to the grocery store and they have like all of the snacks at the aisle. And a lot of times you like succumb to the pressure of, you know, I haven't eaten yet. And I see that like Chomps turkey stick for $3.50. I'm like, I'm already spending $140 on groceries. Like, what difference does the $3 make? That's how Shane would be. That's how the coloring book. What's another $11? That doesn't make any difference. All right. Thank you, guys. Jenna Cottrell, Dan Fates, Buffalo Plus, 13 Woo. Women Rochester, Matt Beauvais here in Buffalo, Channel 7. We'll talk to you guys soon. Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
Love you.
Thank you.
Bye, guys.